It's a great pleasure for me to be here this morning, and I would like to deeply thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity. Before I give my presentation on the molecular breeding to boost rice production in Africa, I would like to give you some general information about African rice and rice in Africa. So African rice is an intergovernmental research association of 26 member states since Ethiopia has joined us last month. And as you can see on the slide there, African rice mission is to contribute to poverty alleviation, food security in Africa through research, development, and partnership. And you will see it throughout the slides that partnership is very key to our way of working. African rice is probably most known through the Nerica varieties that have been developed by Monty Jones in the late 1990s, early 2000. Rice is the commodity with the fastest growing demand in Africa. It has been projected that by 2035, 30 million more tons of rice will be needed on the continent. And this is mainly due to, this is mainly due to two factors. The overall growth of the population. So production has estimated that by 2050, 80 additional people will be on the continent every minute. The other factor is that rice is no longer a luxury crop. I'm sure in many African countries, people would eat rice when there is a celebration. Now it's almost every day that people eat rice. That's also contributing to increase the demand. Rice is produced in several different regions, and production has been increasing across the years. Here on the slide, you can see that between 2013 and 2014, it has increased by 11%. But still, rice production cannot keep pace with the demand, and the continent relies on imports to fill the gap. This has cost the continent $7.5 billion in 2013. Rice alone represents 21% of the food import bill of the continent. Rice is mainly produced in three major ecologies, with the rain-fed lowland being the most important one, contributing 40% of the area cultivated, followed by upland and irrigated. The others are, mangrove, deep water, and other marginal production systems. But across all the production systems, we have observed that actual yields actually are not realized. Actual yields are far lower than the yield potential. So we observe in the rice hubs yield gaps from 1.6 ton per hectare to 2.1. This is mainly due to several constraints, including abiotic stresses. Therefore, there is a need to develop high yielding and resilient rice varieties for Africa. To address these issues, Africa Rice and partners have several breeding targets from agronomic to improve rice using different traits. From agronomic traits to biotic stress tolerance, but also grain quality. And for each production system, each region, we have to design different trait combinations that make our job even more difficult, because it's not about one country, it's about at least 40 countries. How we do breeding at Africa Rice? First of all, we set the breeding target. What are the constraints in our target environments? What the farmers need? What the consumers need? And then we search which one is the right germplasm to address those issues. Then we move to pre-breeding market development to see which are the tools that can help us design these lines. Once the lines are developed, we move to the multi-evaluation trials to see how stable and how well adapted are our varieties. For most breeding programs in the world, the job would stop there, but it's not the same for Africa. At Africa Rice, we have to go beyond developing the varieties. We have to assist our NAS partners in varietal release, but also in seed production. So, now that we have set the stage and you are a little bit familiar with rice and African rice, I will move to the research part of my presentation. And this is the outline. I will first talk about exploring the natural genetic variation. And it is quite obvious that the first source would be our gene bank. So African rice is holding the largest collection of rice in Africa with 21,000 accessions as of 2016. I mentioned that it's free upon request, but you have to go through some agreements. But in principle, you can get the seeds based on some based on your request. African rice is conserving cultivated rice varieties, but also wild species. And we have conservation, medium-term conservation, and also long-term conservation. At IATA, for example, we have the long-term storage, but we also have backup at Svalbard and Four Collins. African rice will soon move its gene bank to Côte d'Ivoire Bay, where we are moving our operations, and there as well we will have a long-term storage facility. It's not enough to have all these accessions in the gene bank, right? We need to characterize them to know what they are good for. So we have been doing that, let's say, for small sets of collections in our gene bank, but recently we have put an effort on characterizing the Glabrima collection of about 2,000 rice accessions. And we are aiming to characterize the whole gene bank accession. And we have seen with some high throughput technologies that it's not only a dream, we can make it. We are also involved in genetic characterization of the germplasm in partnership with different collaborators. For example, we have done that for the Glabrimas and also the Sativa, the Bartai. And we are also involved in allele mining or target genes, for example, the SUB1 gene, the PUP1 gene, the RYMV genes, etc. And we have to do more, of course, to get the donors, the alleles that we need to make rice more resilient. African rice have been also involved in two initiatives to get the genomic sequence of African rice, the Rice Glabrima. One of the initiatives is the work that Professor Rodwing will present later this morning. So that collaboration with the University of Arizona and two scientists of African rice contributed to this work. The second initiative is the work that have been done with the IRD in sequencing CG14 and TOG5681. Those two actually are the parents, the Glabrima parents of the Nerica varieties for upland and lowland. And I think there will be also a talk this afternoon by IRD on this topic. Now that we have all this information in hand, actually, yeah, I forgot to mention that having that genome information gives us a tremendous resource to mobilize the traits that render African rice resilient. And knowing the traits, we can easily mobilize the genes to our breeding programs. And that's what will lead us to the second point, how we develop the high-yielding and resilient rice varieties through identifying the donors, the QTLs, and then moving those QTLs to the breeding programs. So the first point will be finding the promising donors. I will give you a quick overview for both abiotic stresses and biotic stresses, because that's where we are mainly focusing our research. But we don't forget about yield, of course, and grain quality. This is a quick overview, let's say, for abiotic stress tolerance. For all the abiotic stresses that we are targeting, we make sure that we have highly promising donors. And we get those donors from the Oryza glabrima species, from the Sativa species, from our Nerica varieties, but also from the land races that have been collected by the NAS in their respective countries. So here you have a long, I could not spell all the names, so I thought I would better just give you some numbers, and then later I will give you some examples. For example, for drought, as you can see on the example top right. Under severe drought stress, you have varieties like IR64, which have completely collapsed, 40 gram per meter square. We have some of our Nericas that were not doing that bad. The Nericas that we consider our drought-tolerant checks, Nerica 4, Nerica 7, they are doing relatively good. But the ones that are circled are doing even better than our best checks. So these resources will be definitely relevant for breeders to mobilize. The second example is on iron toxicity, recently published in Field Crops Research, where we have actually characterize the whole collection of the Glaberimas, and then we have identified four Glaberima accessions that are consistently good across different countries and across seasons. So this is just an example. To identify those donors, we do screening using different platforms. And these platforms are located at different places. For example, for drought, we have rainout shelters in Cotonou. We also have rainout shelters in Nigeria. For example, the salinity platform using hydroponics, but also saline fields are in Senegal. Some others are, for example, for submergence is in Ibadan, using both field and controlled iron toxicity called phosphorus deficiency, to make sure that the germplasm we are targeting can be easily screened and then we get the right donors out of this. The same happens for biotic stresses, in particular disease resistance. We also were able to identify some interesting donors for Raicello metal virus, bacterial leaf blight, blast, and again screening is done both in the hotspots and in the screen house. For example, for blast, there are 7 countries that have been identified with screening sites where we can just send the material past it. And as you can see for blast, out of the 18 NERICAs that have been developed for upland, 15 are doing rather very well. And it's not only in one country. Azoles have been collected throughout the continent, and these varieties are still doing very good. Now that we have the donors, breeders have to either use them to directly develop breeding lines, which they are doing using conventional breeding, but they also use it to develop genetic mapping populations to identify the genes or the cutils that are governing the traits. For abiotic stresses, several cutils have been recently identified for various traits, and as you can see on the slide, they are not all at the same stage of advancement. Some cutils have been already identified, they are moving to fine mapping, others are still being identified, and every time it's through collaboration. So for example, I indicated for drought, it is ongoing with Erie, flooding, it's with New York's salinity, it's with Erie, New York University, iron toxicity with Erie, Cornell, phosphorus deficiency with New York's, cold with CIRAD. So we try to mobilize those partners that are in Greece, those partners in the Advanced Research Institute, to get this done. I will give you 2 examples for linkage mapping and also for association mapping, because I cannot present everything, so I try to select. I hope my colleagues won't get angry with me. I try to be as selective as possible. So the first example is on salinity, which has been published in 2014. Whereby a donor called Hasawi has been crossed with 3 varieties grown in Africa, Nerica L19, Sahel-108, and BD90-2. Doing this, they have identified 24 cutils that are common across all 3 populations. And among these cutils, there is one for yield under salinity. And that cutil can explain up to 27% of the phenotypic variation observed. So this cutil, will be fine mapped to narrow down the confidence interval so that it can be easily used in the breeding programs. We are also involved in identifying cutils for phosphorus deficiency with Gyrkas, and we are quite excited about this new one because it could be a replacer of PEP1. So this cutil has been identified using an interspecific population from Sativa and Glaberima, and actually basically these are the Nerica sister lines using WAP56, 104 and CD14. And across 2 seasons, we were able to spot the same cutil, which can explain up to 38% of yield under stress. And lines that have the favorable allele can yield 2 to 3 times more than the lines without. So we are really excited about it. We are pursuing the work, and I hope maybe before the next conference, you will see something new about this. For association mapping, I picked 2 examples for iron toxicity and cold, which we are conducting in collaboration with Cornell University for iron toxicity and cold with CIRAD. So for iron toxicity, we have used the diversity panel that maybe most of you know already. And this panel has been evaluated in 4 hotspots, four different countries where iron toxicity hotspots have been identified. And once the phenotypic data has been collected in Africa, we worked with the Cornell partners to identify the loci that are responsible of. This work is still ongoing. With CIRAC, similarly, my colleagues in Saint-Louis did the phenotyping in Senegal, and then working with the colleagues in CIRAC, they were able to identify several QTLs. And here I've just showed the GWAS for spikelet fertility. And this afternoon, my colleague Babuka Mane will give a talk on this topic. If you're interested, please join. The third example of GWAS in which African rice scientists have been involved is in collaboration with the New York University. Actually, that was not initially the main objective for this work. But while doing it, we were able to, well, in collaboration with them, of course, we were able to identify QTLs, loci responsible for traits of salinity tolerance. And GWAS for six traits were able to identify 11 loci, only in the 93 glabrimers. So you can imagine what may come out of the 2000. We do the same for biotic stresses. Africa Rice and IRD have been working for a long time now on RYMV, since the discovery of RYMV1, RYMV2, and all the alleles related. And mainly these were, let's say, West African strains. In East Africa, we are also coming up with new donors. I mentioned the Mongaza, and we also want to see what is going on there for that part of the, for that region of Africa. The work is ongoing, so I cannot give you more information. But for bacterial leaf blight and gold midge, some interesting results were obtained recently, and I will talk a little bit more about them. For BLB, the paper has been published this year in Rice. This is the first report on QTL associated with resistance to African XOO strains. Until now, focus has been on the Asian strains. Now we also have QTLs for the African strains. And what this study have identified, out of the 9 QTLs detected, there are 2 that are worth of interest for us at least. The QTL on chromosome 7, which is a major QTL, effective for African strains, 2 out of 4. But still, it explains up to 36% of the variation observed. The second QTL is on chromosome 11, which is effective across all the African strains that have been tested, but also effective for the Asian strain. And there it can explain up to 68% of the variation. So we are quite excited about these QTLs, and we really hope that we can go up to the gene level to have well-designed markers for breeders. The second example for biotic stresses is the African rice gold midge. Maybe most of you are not familiar with gold midge. I should have pictures to show you how it looks like. QTL marking for gold midge has been done by my colleagues in Cotonou and Nigeria. And they have crossed one variety, IATA306, with 3 different recipient varieties. One is the glabrima, the other one is a sativa indica, the other one is a sativa japonica, to see how stable are some of the QTLs across rice species. And again, this was the first report on genomic region associated with gold midge, African rice gold midge. So this is the report I just picked in the publication. Out of the 28 QTLs identified for gold midge incidence and severity across the 3 populations, there is one which is particularly attracting our attention, which is on chromosome 4. That QTL explains up to 34% of the variation, LOD score 60. And the confidence of interval is 5 centimeter. We are trying to narrow it down. And most of the QTLs that we have identified are background specific, except one on chromosome 1. But still, it is worth transferring it in the allied varieties. We have identified donors. From there, we get the QTLs, the genes. What will we do with them? Of course, move them to the breeding programs using molecular markers. for marker-assisted selection, marker-assisted backcrossing, marker-assisted recurrent selection. First, I will talk about the abiotic stress tolerances. I will first give you a summary table and then some examples, some highlights. For abiotic stresses, our breeders are using different QTELs. For example, for drought, 6 QTELs have been identified in-house using a marker-assisted recurrent selection project. And currently, the lines are being evaluated in Nigeria, Benin, and Burkina. The best lines will then go to multi-evaluation trial and possibly for release. For submergence, we have used the sub-1 gene that have been identified by Erie, and these have been integrated in African varieties, Nerica L19, Vita 4, but also into, and these two are the most advanced ones. They have moved to the breeding task force. I will come later on that concept of the breeding task force. The other lines that have been converted are 5 Malagasy varieties, and once it is done, we will transfer it to our NAS partner for FIFA to do the evaluation. For salinity, we also have some good promising lines using Saltol introduced from Erie, PUP1 introduced from Dirkas and Erie, cold tolerance using CTB1, CTB2, and QCTB8 from Nias and Naro. And we are also trying to combine different stresses, because it's not enough to have salinity tolerance when you will also have flooding in the coming days. So we are trying as much as possible to combine stresses. For example, now we have lines with salinity tolerance using Saltol, sub-1, and also blast resistance. So for the Saltol marker-assisted backcrossing, this has been published recently as well. As you can see on the photo, you have FL471, which is the donor variety, standing well under salinity. You have the IR29 check, which is completely wiped out. And then you have the Saltol integration lines that are really doing nicely. And this is from one cross. We have also other crosses, other populations that are ongoing to make sure that some countries may get the right variety, the right lines there. On the graphic there, I have circled some variety, some integration lines that are doing good under control condition without salt, but also under salinity. And on this slide here, you will see the yield advantage that we were able to obtain through this marker-assisted backcrossing procedure. The 8 best line were able to yield up to a yield gain, to obtain a yield gain of up to 120% more than the recipient parent, RASI, here. So these lines have been already distributed to 5 countries in West Africa, where they will be evaluated across different environments, and the best ones, I hope, will be soon released. For sub-1, submergence using the sub-1 gene from Erie. Initially, we got lines from Erie, the Swarna sub-1, the I64 sub-1. We tested them in Africa. They were doing excellently. They were really great. And then we thought, oh, let's see whether the same will happen with our African varieties, because they are already adapted in different other environments. So we did the same, transferred the sub-1 into Nerica L19 and Vita 4. And as you can see on the table there, well, I think I don't need to comment it. The recipient parent Nerica L19 is yielding 6 grams per meter square. The integration lines, 549. I did not compute the yield gain, I think. It's quite obvious. So currently, multi-location testing of these lines is ongoing in 10 states in Nigeria, because Nigeria is regularly affected by flooding. But we also distribute these seeds to Sierra Leone and Liberia for multi-environmental testing. For disease resistance, we also have similar progress. For example, for RYMV, we are using the resistant alleles that have been previously identified in collaboration with IRD. We also work on BLB using information from the literature. For gold meat, we are focusing attention on the QTELs that I've just talked about. And for blast, we have introduced genes from NIAS and currently. So I give you also the status for 2016. The most advanced QTEL marker-assisted Mark acidity selection program for biotic stress is with RYMV, whereby the lines are already in the release pipeline, and I will give you some highlights. So for RYMV 1-2 marker-assisted back crossing, the Gigante was used as the source of donor, and it was crossed with four varieties that are widely grown in Africa. And the four best lines that have been resistant across field testing and controlled environment were distributed to 12 African countries through the Africa Rice Breeding Task Force to make sure that we can cover as much environment as possible. And it happens that one of the lines, NIL 130, have been nominated for release in Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire, and also NIL 59 is nominated in Nigeria. You can see on the picture there how the difference between the recipient and the integration line. And this has been widely relayed by the press. Here I just showed one in Cote d'Ivoire, whereby they assimilate RYMV to rice AIDS, because of its capacity to completely wipe out a rice field. We are also evaluating the blast resistance, the integration lines for blast resistance. This picture was taken in Tanzania last year, and you can see the difference between the integration lines and the susceptible check. So this was on, let's say, building resilience, but we thought, okay, it's good to have resilient variety, but they also need to yield quite an acceptable yield. And because this information is available in the literature, there are genes for yield component. We are also using them in our breeding program, sometimes just for yield potential, but sometimes we combine them with stress tolerance. For example, the last line is showing how we combine the yield component with sub-1. We are also designing the same for other stresses. So the status for 2016 is that some promising lines have been selected. And here you can see the yield advantage that we can obtain using, for example, GW5 for grain weight, for grain number, for grain size, and also comb strength. Some of the lines can give up to 40% more yield than the best check. The best check here being SIL 139. But if you take NERCAL 19 or IS64, you will get even higher yield gain. So all these nice lines, all these promising lines that we have developed, we can test them within the Africa Rice network of countries. But we thought we have to reach wider audience. So we do that through two mechanisms. The first one is through the Africa-wide Breeding Task Force. In this task force, we make sure that we mobilize the capacities of our NAS partners to test advanced breeding lines varieties. For example, if I take Africa rice, whatever is highly promising for irrigated ecology, rain-fed lowland, upland, we make sure that we get our best in this task force. But not only African rice, all centers which are interested to test their varieties in Africa and to see them released there are most welcome to contribute. We receive varieties from Erie, Siat, also Sirat, and you are most welcome if you have promising lines. But in the period 2010-2015, more than 2,500 lines have been evaluated. Not all have been released, but at least the NAS have the materials. They will do the adaptation trials and see what is best for them. And as of 2014, 29 countries contributed. And this on the map there, I'm just showing the coverage in Africa. The second mechanism we use is the Rice Sector Development Hubs. These hubs are regions that are selected by Africa Rice National Partners where research and services and local innovation are integrated across the rice value chain. This is to make sure that we achieve the development outcome and impact. So all the task forces, Africa Rice does not only have the breeding task force, but also the agronomy task force, the rice processing task force, well, they're all listed there. We make sure that whatever promising technology comes out of this task force are easily channeled to the other rice stakeholders through these platforms. So on that note, I will conclude and give you some elements of the way forward, how we see molecular breeding at Africa Rice. In conclusion, new donors have been identified for both cultivated species. Major QTLs have been identified. Some are in the process of fine mapping. We are efficiently and successfully using molecular markers in breeding. And as you have seen on the slide, some of the marker assisted derived lines are even in the release pipeline. And this was made possible because of the strong partnership mechanisms that we have put in place through the GRISP, through the GRISP CLP, the task forces, the RICE hubs. And as IRD DDG mentioned in the opening, in Africa there is a huge knowledge gap. So Africa RICE, while doing its research activities, is trying as much as possible to also strengthen the capacities of our NARES partners in terms of training, and sometimes even investing capital equipment in these centers to make sure that we are not doing high-end research and then when it comes down to the users, we are completely lost. So we make sure we all go together along the line. The way forward, well, that's my own statement. I hope you agree with me that we have already traveled far, but still there is a lot more we have to do and we should do. First, for example, is to conduct a comprehensive characterization of our gene bank. We have done it for the glabrular collection, 2,000. We have 21,000. We also need to fast track the release and the adoption of the varieties that have been upgraded for marker-assisted selection. This is already happening in some Asian countries, whereby, for example, a variety like IR64, released in a country, you add a gene, you don't need to go through the whole lengthy procedure of release. We are trying to have the same happening in Africa, so that will make sure that varieties that are upgraded quickly reach the farmers, quickly reach the end users. We also need to strengthen our capacities in bioinformatics to capitalize on the genomic information that is available for African rice. I have shown you the rice genome for African rice. There is also the 3,000 rice genomes in which some African varieties are present. We really need to capitalize on this to make sure that we deliver the right product to the end users. We also need to plan more forward breeding, if I can say, because climate change is not waiting. So we need to know what will happen, let's say, in the next decade, so that already we can start designing the varieties that will be better adapted for the future. And as we say in French, l'argent est le nerf de la guerre. So if you want to win the battle of rice import, we need funding. And now funding is decreasing. I think it's an overall situation. But we need to find innovative mechanisms to mobilize funding to make sure that we win the battle to make sure that we deliver the rice products needed in Africa. On that note, I would like to thank all Africa Rice colleagues, scientists who has contributed to this talk, the NAS partners. This is not only the work of Africa Rice. There is no way we can do it all by ourselves. So we really count on the NAS partners, on the GRISP Rice partners, the Advanced Research Institutes, but also the donors who have been supporting us since. So to all of them, I say thank you. But I will not leave now. I want you to see this. Don't miss the Africa Rice booth. It's at the registration lobby, nicely handled by Savitri and Raman. And as Emmanuel said, there will be also the round table on the self-sufficiency in Africa. So please join. Thank you very much for your attention.